is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From England Race Course, Breeders' Cup 2022, a very good Wednesday. Race Fan Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and ready for the next step toward Friday and Saturday. And you never know who's going to wander by. We're in the back ring in the auction pavilion, and there's Mark Cassie. And so how do you not draft Mark Cassie to open the show? Good morning.
Morning. I was lost.
looking a bit on a horse.
I thought there was a horse sale today. Yeah.
Well, they do have the last result up on the screen from the sale. Mark joining us for just a couple of minutes, waiting for the licensing office to open, actually. And did I hear you say for Len? Len needs a he's not
no,
licensed.
He just wanted his picture badge. Yeah, Len Green. Oh. So
too funny. Well, there's actually
when Len wants something,
boom, you make it happen.
You got it.
Well, he certainly wanted enough horses during the course of the yearling sales market.
He did. He's they're John and Len and Lois, they're serious. They're firing away. I'm expecting big things.
It's like a rebirth almost.
Yeah.
The last few years. I mean,
they have really stepped up their game, and I think you're going to, you know, we've had a good year, and I think it'll build from there.
Mark, the task ahead, of course, Breeders' Cup, you got two in the body of the Cup itself, and then one running in the marathon, which is sort of, you know, Breeders' Cup adjacent, since being decommissioned as a Breeders' Cup race. We'll talk about those, but one of the things that I wanted to slip in here, since you're the first person I've had the opportunity to bring up the appointment to the HISA advisory board, and you mentioned that there's a flesh pressing meet and greet,
right,
before some of the heavy lifting gets done. But give everybody a quick synopsis of your interest in doing it and what your expectations are and what stakeholders, horse players, and the industry can expect from the advisory board and their interaction with HISA administration.
Well, you know, I'm excited to be on the board. It's something, anybody that knows me, I've been pretty outspoken about a lot of different deals, you know, drugs, you know, the different drugs being used and different ideas. So, you know, it's something that's near and dear to me. I've been doing this 40-some years. Don't know how many more years I'll be training. A few, I hope. But, you know, I have a son, Norman, who's coming up, and I have another son, Colby, that possibly could be training. So it's, you know, the industry's been great to me, and I'm just trying to give back. And I think it's important. I think it's a great advisory board. I think they did, HISA, Lisa Lazarus, did a great job. A lot of good people on that board. And those are people that have been in the trenches that you know, there's a lot of smart people out there, but you learn things, Steve, being in the trenches. And I think it's important, and it's something that I plan on working very hard at.
Now, just to cure it up, did they come after you, or did you sign up to be on the board?
No, I signed up. I think there were
200 plus
50 people. No. To me, as soon as the day they came out and said they were going to have an advisory board, I sent an email in. Again, it's something that is extremely important to me. We've went a long time. Our industry needs a lot of help. We need, you know, we as trainers, all you want is a level playing field, and you want to be able to have the same rules wherever you go. It's such a mishmash right now. So. There's a long road ahead, I'm sure. I think they have a great leader in Lisa Lazarus. So I just hope that I can help in some way.
How had you up
to the point of the inclusion of this advisory board, how had you viewed their, you know, their initial foray into formulating a plan of attack? Because one of the widespread and to me very legitimate complaints is there's been a complete lack of interaction, of communication, of outreach, essentially, and it in a lot of ways it is hampering the, you know, the widespread coalescing around the initiative.
You know, look, what a task.
Agreed.
You know, and I've always felt in everything, you know, with any gain, there's always pain. So there's definitely pain. The thing that I appreciate and I've seen already is, you know, their willingness to adapt. And you know what? It's a work in progress. But it's not like, hey, this is the way we're going to do it. You're going to like it or not. That, you know, and so
that's been the approach up till now.
Yeah, but it's, well, you know, I had the blacksmiths come to me and say, well, they changed this, they changed that. And I said, well, that's good. That means they're listening. And so maybe I'm wrong, but I think, you know, they're going to listen. And I hope that's what part of the advisory board can help. You know, we can't change any rules. We can only give suggestions and again, give our from the trenches. That's where we've been. I've been doing it 43 years.
And that's good to hear. And, you know, we're having, in University of Arizona, we're having our little racing secretary get together. Mm-hmm. And Heisa's going to have someone, Ann McGovern's going to be there. And I talked to her last week. And she's, look, we want to hear from you. And it was great to have that response where you guys, you know, come up with something that, you know, we're missing or needing or we can do better or easier. We'd be glad to listen to you. So I don't know if that was the attitude 6 months ago or appeared to be that it wasn't, well, but I know they've opened up.
I can tell you, so as soon as it all came out, I hired actually someone just to handle my HISA, a young lady in Ocala. And she has said to me, they have been nothing but cooperative, asking, learning, and so my interaction with them has been so far has been very positive. So I can't comment on other what's happened with other people, other things. I can only make my opinions known on how it's been working for me. And I can tell you, they listen, and they're trying to get it right. But look at the task they've been. It's been bad for so long, and in so many jurisdictions, and everybody wanting to do their own thing. And we all know. We can sit here. We saw it a few years back. We all knew what was going on with a couple trainers that are going to jail, and there's still more to fix. Nothing more frustrating than you sit there, you do your job, and you go into the paddock, and you're going into a gunfight with a knife. You know, very frustrating, very frustrating. You know, so anyways, like I said, nothing's easy. There's going to be a lot of pain, but in the end, I think it'll work.
Mark Cassie joining us. Just wanted to get that out because you're the first. You're the first participant on the advisory council that we've seen in person so far. Let's turn our attention to Friday and Saturday. And actually, Friday is you do have a horse in that maiden opener, determinedly in the
opener. Yes.
On Saturday, I do want to ask you about a maiden or two, but let's talk obviously about Wonder Wheel. Usually, when it comes to the Breeders' Cup and the Breeders' Cup Purple Hats, the trainers that have multiple horses look at their hat, and that's who their best hope is. Wonder Wheel comes in off the win here, and she was speaking of determinedly. She was determined, and you know, Mark, talk about the opportunity in the Juvenile Fillies, and you know how she's able to turn back 12 of these.
Well, you know what? Knock on wood. I thought this morning she trained as good as I've ever seen her train. She is, in my opinion, a much better horse than she was a month ago when she won the Alcibiades. That being said, she's going to have to be. It's, you know, there's a lot of questions coming in here. Obviously, from a number standpoint, the New York contingency looks extremely tough. You know, the Belmont, well, Aqueduct Belmont, Todd Plesh, Todd's horse, and couple, if you look at the numbers, they have the best numbers.
Chocolate Gelato.
Yeah, Chocolate Gelato, but it was on a sloppy track. It also, you know, they're going to be going two turns for the first time. You know, they have a lot of obstacles too. I felt like and was happy that I was able to get a race into our filly here at Keeneland, so she's got a bit of a home field advantage. We post position is so important in these two-year-old races. And we were lucky we drew a good post. So I think that's a positive. A lot of speed in the race. Wasn't a lot of speed in the Alcibiades. And let's face it, we had a great trip in the Alcibiades. I understand all that. It's Tyler's feeling, and it was my feeling as well. She kind of lost focus on the lead. And, you know, so maybe it was closer than it really looked. Well, it was. Maybe she's a little better than what she showed that day, but you never know until you run. So I'm not going to make predictions. We're going to just let them sell it on the track.
So,
but you're right. I'm wearing the hat that I like.
I like that. You mentioned you have a win over the track, and actually you're the only filly that's won over the track, and there's very few that even run over the track. As Keeneland, as a rule in general, how much of a plus is that?
I think it's a big plus. I've used Keeneland even when it wasn't at Keeneland. You know, when we took Classic Empire out and he won the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita, we used Keeneland here. And I like Keeneland. I like the futurity in the Alcibiades because you have the ability to get two turns and get some, get some experience over that. And I think that's important.
I think you're absolutely is, especially with the younger horses, when you're asking them, especially trying it the first time in a race like the Breeders' Cup.
We've all watched many of 2-year-old races. I've been in a lot of them where they run to the first turn, and a lot of them don't make the first turn because they, you know, this is a new deal for a lot of them. So, yes, the experience for me is a big thing.
Wonder Wheel, who has been nearly perfect, just the spin away placement behind Leave No Trace, and when it comes to expectations, Mark, when you mention the pace scenario, I mean, obviously she's going to be forward, and she drew the rail in the Alcibiades, which really forces your hand, but she doesn't feel like she has to be out there. So everybody is basically saying, well, she was tiring late and they were getting to her late, and so she's way more vulnerable here at a shorter price, or maybe the same price, frankly. She was 4-1 in the Alcibiades. She's 5-1 morning line. I think she might maybe she floats up a tick or two,
maybe,
but from a pace scenario,
you know, all valid points. It's our belief that she will rate just fine. I think I don't, you know, we have one of the best riders in the world riding her, so
riding
I don't
well.
Give any instructions. I would say that, you know, we're going to be forwardly placed, and she's going to have a target to run at. Hopefully she can run down the target, but I think that'll help her a little. She made the lead very easy in the Alcibiades, and you know, like I said, I think she got a little lost. If you watch, you know, there's some people believe in gallops outs, but some people don't. Nobody ever went by her, even after the, you know.
You mentioned post position. For these young horses going a mile and 16th here on this track that is a mile and 16th, how important is it? Not just Breeders' Cup time. That's what
extremely important. You know, I was talking to Chad yesterday. He has a really good filly. His filly,
Raging Sea, out on the outside.
She drew the 14, and then I think he drew the 14 in the mile as well. I said, "Welcome to my world." A couple times we went. I can think of my Conquistadori. She drew the 14 hole. She was favorite going into the Breeders' Cup turf. Drew the 14 hole, ran 70 feet farther than everybody else. I ran another filly that was, I can't think of her name right now, but she was one of the favorites, and she drew the 14 hole. It's tough. It's extremely tough. In a normal race, if I draw out there, I'd just probably scratch. Okay. You just have to be so much better.
And that's what I thought. And coming from you who runs a lot of horses, it's right. Not like you run two or three. You're known for running many, many, especially
it's a big,
here.
It's a big operation.
It's a big operation. north of the border and south of the border. So I wanted to hear that, you know, exactly from a trainer here that does that, because you hear about it, you read about it, but...
Oh, it's extremely important. I mean, just look at... I haven't looked at them, but the stats, they're not a lot of horses. Of course, they don't run a lot of 14 horses going two turns. It's a big factor in the mile.
Very, yeah.
The two-year-old and, you know...
Yeah, talk about it. Let's talk about Webb Slinger.
Webb Slinger, he drew the 10 hole, which is fine because he's going to be.
He's going to drop back a little bit.
He's going to drop back. Hopefully, Dylan's going to be able to find him a nice pocket to sit in. So it's not that important. But you have a horse, you know, like these 2 year olds. You're trying, and think about this again. You've got 2 year olds that have never ran two turns. There's a lot of them. Now you ask them to come away from there. Cluck to him, say, come on, get going. And then you say, wait, we got to make this turn. It's a lot to comprehend.
And then get them started again when they get onto the backstretch. Webb Slinger, I mentioned as we were leading up to draw day, this was a horse that at first in the pre-entries you were on the outside, one of the horses not selected, pre-selected into the field.
Right.
And the team was frustrated at first and then relieved to get in once, you know, there were some commitments into other spots. And getting into the race, I mean, talk about him, away since September in winning the Now. And, he's going to be a nice price in here. And, you know, it does feel that after the Appleby Godolphin Lope de Vega colt, Silver Knot, that
it's wide open. If you look at the numbers, they're all pretty close.
Yeah.
If you ever got a shot, you should watch his race at Saratoga. It was an auction race, but it was 5.5 on the turf. He almost went through the hedge, dropped back to last, and still nearly won. And that was what made me send him to the now as a maiden. Louis rides a lot of horses for me, and he doesn't say a whole lot after a race. He came back, he rode him in that race, Saez, and said, this is a runner. And I told, so we had the now, and we didn't have a rider at Monmouth. And I called, you know, we've had a lot of luck with Dylan and his agent. I called Mike McGilloria, and I said, how much you got going on Saturday, I think it was, in New York? He goes, well, I have a few mounts. I said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I said, I want you to go and ride this horse. I think this horse can win. And it's a $500,000 race. So they took off four or five horses and went roading.
Nice. Well, and it pays off. And of course, that was some rich affair.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah.
The
watch Yums goes over the edge.
Oh, there you go. Hammer pulled up the using a little RTN action and showing that race. Mark, let me get another quick one in. You mentioned the TAA, the marathon, and Cupid's Claws is going to mix it up in there. I really haven't gotten to the marathon yet. Anything that?
I just think, you know, it's owned by Gary Barber, Adam Wachtel, and you know, they've always felt that he the distance is going to help him. He had a very, very tough trip his last start at Keeneland, pinned down on the rail, and it was a little short for him. So we're coming back, but he's going to have to run a big effort.
You got a horse as well, I mentioned on Saturday, who's you've been putting on turf. He should be fit, determinedly. Mm-hmm. This is Jack Oxley. Was actually a modest purchase and is a half to some horses that were fast and fast early. You're out in the 13 hole, but it's a 7/8 race, and
I actually like that post.
Right, and you got Flavian Pratt to ride.
Get a lot of dirt. It's in your face. So you know what, he trains really well on the dirt, so I'm going to give him a try on it. His first race he ran decent on it, and you know what, he's a nice horse. Like you said, he's plenty fit, so we'll see.
Why not, right? Since we always do this, the opportunity to check in on a couple of other interesting horses, Mark, coming up as well where did I see that maiden? Churchill on Sunday, Smart Prize.
Yeah, he's a horse, again, that, you know, we didn't pay a lot of money for. And I thought he ran good first time. And he's doing well. He should run well.
You know, you mentioned earlier, real quick, Gary Barber and Wattell. We're just watching the replay here. You've run hundreds of horses for them, and you know what?
Thousand
horses
for
them.
Gary,
I mean, you know what? And I know Gary. I don't pretty good, and they just love to run. They just love to be involved in the game,
and
it's great. I love to.
You know how many times by doing something like that? Look at you look at a horse like War of Will, who everybody probably would think, you know, he's just turf. I mean, he's by Warfront out of a Galileo mare, but Gary was like, you know, he trained, let's try him on the dirt, and look what happened.
Right, and you get a horse that's fit, he's ready to run,
you
find a place to run,
you
put him in.
If you're not in it, you can't win it. If you're afraid to step off first, you can't steal second. I think a lot of horses sit in the barn that could be running that would win races, but
waiting you for know, that perfect spot.
Yeah, I don't worry about my win percentage. I mean, if I worried about my win, I was saying to somebody, it's not uncommon in the big races. For like in Toronto, we run three a race. Well, best you can hope for is to win one, unless you're Todd. Todd dead heated, right?
Yes, he did.
That was quite impressive.
Mark, I want to ask you about one stake horse, and you know, obviously you've won your share of Breeders' Cup races, and more to come. Mrs. Weber, of course, one of the most recent, and with world approval, but Super Hoity Toity winning the Damsel, and feels like this Uncle Mo filly, end of her 3-year-old year, is stepping forward, now 5 for 8.
Right, she's pretty good,
yeah.
But she's going to do the same thing that we did it with Teppan.
Put her away?
We did it with Got Stormy. I don't like running those 3-year-old fillies against older horses, so we send them home, give them a break. She's already back in Ocala, and but you're right. She has this thing about her. She likes to win. She's 5 for 8.
That's a nice quality to have in a horse.
Probably should be 6 for 8. Had a terrible trip in the prior race. So, yeah, she's a nice filly. Nice filly.
Mark Cassie, always a pleasure, and best wishes coming up to the weekend, and for the whole team. You know, get lucky, and we'll be using you to keep the finger on the pulse of Heisa, and
I don't know
how
about
things
that.
Progress.
Okay, I don't know about that, but yeah, I'm just a very small piece in the puzzle. So, appreciate you guys having me.
Not at all, Mark Cassie, everybody, and plenty of opportunities.
I wanted to say dual Hall of Famer, Mark Cassie.
He might have to try to find another. Is there any other?
Well, somebody suggested I could go to Mexico.
There you go.
I don't think it was to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, anyways. All right. Have a good day.
Mark Cassie, everybody. And couldn't pass up the opportunity to check in with Mark. We got to get to Dick Powell because Dick's got a tight schedule this morning. And you know, for those that were anticipating maybe any Hong Kong this morning, no Hong Kong. HKJC took the precautionary steps with a typhoon and some sort of a tropical storm approaching the island, and so they canceled. Understood. They seem to do that a couple of times over the course of the year. So no, that's just as well. We got plenty to talk about with Dick when it comes to his particularly the international perspective, which is what we're counting on. And in fact, I had Dick put together his turf opinions for the Betting Companion. Betting Companion should be out later this afternoon. And Dick's opinions, basically all the turf races, and you'll find it right after my introductory page in the Betting Companion. They're doing some final editing. We wanted to punch the numbers in so that you didn't have to transcribe them yourself after the draw. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning. Gee, no Hong Kong today.
No Hong Kong. A little typhoon. So.
Dick Powell, good morning.
Yeah, let's hope everybody's all right. But meanwhile, we got the Breeders' Cup.
As they say, turn your radio off there, Dick.
So, yeah. Dick Powell, good morning. Dick, is that what's that coming through?
Everybody's all right. VSIN.
As they say, turn your radio off there, Dick.
Well,
hang on. Yeah. There we go.
Thank you. All right. We don't, that doesn't happen too often. You hear that on a lot of phone-in shows, right? Exactly. Hammers.
No,
with
but
it.
I was downstairs when the phone rang, and I had to come upstairs, and I had the TV and the laptop already turned on. So, yes.
There we go, Dick. In fact, I want to pull out your opinions and your thoughts. First of all, an overview. Just kind of a general overview from you approaching Friday and Saturday.
I think the Europeans are going to be very tough in the turf races. They, just anecdotally, I don't think they have the depth that they've had in the past, but they've sent over some really good horses in the individual turf races. So I think in many of them, they are the horse to beat. Unfortunately, they will be the horse to beat, and they will be the horses that get bet. So as far as finding a euro at a price, that's going to be a lot more difficult. But yeah, they sent over a nice contingent, and Appleby, I think, has seven. Aiden O'Brien has seven. I watched them yesterday. They're in the breakfast at the Breeders' Cup, where they come out and do their single file walk and then canter and stuff like that. It's all well done. They know what they're doing. They have great help. I didn't realize that one of Appleby's exercise riders, I don't know if he's here, but he's a regular all year, is Kieran Fallon. So it's like,
not so bad.
No. So they come prepared, and they've done it many times. And Appleby just has this spectacular record with the shippers. Aiden's record isn't as good percentage-wise, because I think Aiden has sent over just so many horses. And, you know, for every order over Australia that wins at big odds, he probably has five others that didn't win at big odds, but he still shipped them over here and gave them a chance. Where Charlie Appleby, these horses all seem to be razor focused.
We're focusing, and Appleby's getting plenty of attention, and you can understand why after the most recent successes. But shouldn't we also spread the conversation to the Godolphin runners that are operating under Bill Mott's care, that are operating under Brendan Walsh as well. For instance, you've got Cody's Wish, another of the Godolphin participants, has got a big chance, obviously, in the dirt mile, if not potentially the likeliest winner. The Godolphin success in North America, and that includes, those smashing performances at Woodbine. I don't know, Dick. I mean, it certainly I don't know how to even phrase it. Without raising some kind of an alarm per se. It's amazing. These numbers, and I'm just looking here at the starters that are scheduled. Mischief Magic, who we talked about yesterday in the juvenile turf sprint. Silver Knot, who feels like the likely, just talked to Mark Cassie on Saturday in the turf sprint. Creative Force and Naval Crown. Modern Games, of course. Nation's Pride, I don't particularly get. Rebel's Romance, the more I looked last night, the more I liked him in the turf. So there's the Godolphin Appleby contingent.
Yeah, and they've changed their game plan over the years where they do have domestic trainers, horses that are purchased and stay over here, do not make that stop in Dubai for the winter like they used to with Saeed Bin Sarur. They've changed that up. It's been very successful. And same thing with Shadwell. They have good horses with Todd Fletcher and things like that. So, yeah, I'm just more focused on the shippers because we know less about them than we do about the Cody's Wishes and horses like that.
I'll give everybody the O'Briens, that roster, Mediate in the Juvenile Phillies Turf, Victoria Road in the boys' race. When it comes to Saturday, there's Toy, who has really not gotten much discussion in the Philly and Mare turf, and I know Hammer, who wrote it up for our betting companion, has got Toy listed as his super bomb. Tuesday, who's rock solid as well in the Philly and Mare turf. There's the Order of Australia, who it's pretty funny to have a horse that that won this race 2 years ago and kind of come in and be an afterthought. The two turf runners, Broom and Stone Age, and it's interesting. The more I looked at the two of these, the more interested I was in both of them. The turf has been a struggle for me to get a perfect handle on. Yesterday I think we finished the show and we were pretty convinced that Warlike Goddess was going to be a very, very difficult customer. So some individual selections, Dick. You want to walk through from Friday into Saturday?
Well, some overview. Bill Mott is almost giddy with his anticipation of having a big Breeders' Cup.
Mm-hmm.
He trained up here, and he could not be happier the way these horses are going into the Breeders' Cup. So, and that's not, that's kind of not always par for the course for Bill, because he's just been openly enthusiastic about his horses. So that's one overview. You mentioned Rebel's Romance, and one thing with him, got to remember, he's a gelding, so he is not allowed to run in the Arc de Triomphe. He's not allowed to run in many of the major weight for age races in Europe. So what Appleby did was he won the Group 3 in Goodwood, going a mile and a half, and then he went to Germany. And yes, the competition is probably less in Germany, but he won two Group 1s there, going a mile and a half, one on good turf, one on soft turf, although the soft turf finish was faster than the good turf finish. But he gets two races in Germany under the strictest of drug protocols. And now he comes in here with a horse that might be slightly below the radar because people see the German form and they're not enamored with it. But the fact is, he was there because of the gelding status. And that was true last year for one or two of the other Appleby horses. They were geldings, and they couldn't run in some of the big races in the fall. Like, if you have a two-year-old, I don't think you're allowed to run in the Dewhurst. So, you know, they geld some of their horses, and they act accordingly. And this one, it looks like he had a plan. Gets 2.5 mile turf preps, and that will be interesting to see how he does in the 1.5 mile turf. Friday, Wesley's going to be tough with Love Reigns. Just win. Decent race at Ascot. Win back here at Saratoga. Fast. Just draws inside. As long as he makes the break, he'll be right out there. Speedboat Beach for Bob Baffert. We tend to discount California turf horses, especially the young ones. The older ones, not the case, but the young ones, you just usually don't give them enough respect. But he ran a giant race on the dirt, and then he came back on the turf and won 55-1. You know he's going to get out of gate because Bob Sauces are trained perfectly to get out of gate. He is Flavian Pratt. So he's one that might represent a little bit. And then the Platinum Queen is a two-year-old that was second in the Nunthorpe against older horses. I mean, she's a two-year-old running against 4- and 5-year-olds. Carried 114 that day with Holly Doyle. Came back and won the Prix de la Baie at Longchamp against older horses again. Holly can ride. I mean, just you see Holly on this horse and on Nashua. She's looking at 2 wins if she can get the trip. So the Platinum Queen for Richard Fahey looks super tough. And turning back to her own age group is just a gigantic drop in class. So, yes, she drew the 12, but she has gate speed. And Holly is just a terrific rider. So those three look good in the first turf race. The next turf race is the Juvenile Fillies turf. Comanche Country for Phil D'Amato. 1-3 in a row after shipping in from Ireland. Phil does an awesome job with his turf horses out in California, and they seem to ship well. Cairo Concert, the 2-horse for Nathan Squires, went up to Canada, just missed in the Talma, ran a big race from the rail, got shuffled back, had some traffic down there, still only being the length, as the beaten favorite. And then the other one I'm going to use, the other two I'm going to use is Delight from Jonathan Thomas. Has a win over the course when she just exploded in the Jessamine from Luis Saez. And Aiden O'Brien sent over number 10, Mediate, a daughter of No Maid Never, who's having just a spectacular season at stud. And out of a Dalekani mare. So if you have any questions about, well, she's been running 6 furlongs and 7 furlongs, is she going to get the distance? Well, Broodmare Sire says she can. And many of these horses, like if you can run well going 7 furlongs on soft turf, you can easily get a mile on firm turf. So Mediate or Meditate for Aiden O'Brien looks very tough in that race. And the final turf race on Friday is the Juvenile Turf. We saw the fiasco we had last year, hopefully not this year. Aiden sent out Victoria Road, a son of Saxon Warrior, who's a son of the great Deep Impact. Couple of wins coming in, including a Group 3 in France, going 1.8 miles on soft turf, so stamina should be no problem for this one. Silver Knot for Charles Appleby. Godolphin was a third, going 7 furlongs on soft turf, then came back and won by a neck and a Group 3. And number 8, I'm Very Busy from Chad Brown. One first time out up here. Time was pretty fast. The internal fractions was slow, but finished up full of run and then went to the Pilgrim on yielding turf and missed by a length from post 9 as the odds on favorite. So I think he'll redeem himself in this race. Number 8, I'm Very Busy. That takes care of Friday's turf races. Saturday's turf races begin in race number 4, the second Breeders' Cup race. This is the turf sprint. And it looks like a two-horse race. I mean, Golden Pal is spectacular, fast as could be, just blows out of the gate, breaks races open right from the start. But I'm going to throw in Highland Princess, an Irish shipper from John Quinn, won a group one. Comes in off 3 group one wins, and winning group ones against 19 horses, 13 horses, 14 horses in sprint races, not easy to do. So this daughter of Knight of Thunder takes on males, but she's done it already before, and she will try again. So we'll see how Irad gets Golden Pal out of the gate and whether Jason Hart can get Highfield Princess in some kind of stalking position. And then I'm going to throw in Castle Creed. When he turns back to a sprint, he has that devastating late kick. He has Louis as his rider again. And yes, he's been able to stretch out to middle distances, but his best races have been going short. And I think Castle Creed can be running over horses in the stretch for Leon Sadler and Mike Francis.
A quick note here. You mentioned, Jack, you mentioned Mott and the way he comes into the weekend. Just one runner on Friday, American Raquette in the Juvenile Fillies, who's an outsider. But on Saturday, it's a very, very intimidating lineup. Obligatory in the Philly and Mare Sprint, as well as Frank's Raquette, and they both look like beach balls. Casa in the Turf Sprint, then Cody's Wish in the Dirt Mile. Elite Power, who is getting plenty of love in the Sprint, then Warlike Goddess and veteran Channel Maker in the Turf, and Olympiad, who has just been consistent. It's hard to figure a way that he can win the race, but he certainly is an exotics consideration, a horse that's going to be in the race flow with Junior Alvarado. And then he even has got a horse in that Nightcap Stake, the rather rich $350,000 Fall Harvest Wakanaka rounds out the day. So Bill Mott just absolutely with a loaded wagon coming into Saturday.
Yes, and he's I know he's especially high on Frank's Raquette, so we'll see how that one runs. Next turf race is going to be the Philly and Mare Turf. We have a superstar here in Nashua. She was third in the Oaks behind Tuesday. Tuesday was the upset winner that day. Emily Upjohn was the big favorite. Nashua came back and won the Prix de Diane at Chantilly and then won the Nassau Stakes at Goodwood. Just missed in the Prix de L'Opera and now is on that bottomless ground on Arc de Triomphe Day. So this daughter, Franco, can handle just about anything they throw at her. Race is mile and 3/16, so it's going to be three long straightaways. They start, they get a long straight, get into the first turn, around the first turn, down the backside, finish up with another long straightaway. Just hope the race is long enough for Nashua, who certainly has tons and tons of stamina. Tuesday from Aidan O'Brien at Galileo at a Lily Langtry, just spectacular pedigree on the bottom side. Her best race this year might have been a second behind Apanista, who had a huge year racing against mostly fillies in Europe. And then in Italian, any race, you got to look at who's going to go to the front. And if Joel puts an Italian in the front and just cruises along, who knows how long she's going to last. I think she lasts an awful long time. So especially if the Euros are kind of bunched up or whatever. So Chad has a big shot here with number 11 in Italian. Race 6. Breeders' Cup Mile. Modern Games. Won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. He's come over, won the Wood by Mile. He went back and was second in the QE2 at Ascot on a really soft track. That was the track that got Baid beat because of the going. Now he's back here on firm ground. He showed he loved firm ground last year at Del Mar. Nothing not to like about this three-year-old son of Dubawi for Charlie Appleby. And then Annapolis from Todd Pletcher, just putting together race after race. And I like the fact that he has stalking speed, which should do him good. 14 horse fear, you want to get out up in the top four and avoid all the traffic. And then Kinross from this is a son of Kingman, who's one of my favorite sires over in Europe. Just a monster miler, having a spectacular year again at stud. He won the Prix de la Forêt at Longchamp. Now that race won in 1:24, which shows you how slow the track was that day, because that race usually goes 1:18, 1:19. But that was soft going, and then he came back and won the British champion sprint in 1:15. So this is going to be, you know, him getting on firm turf, he's going to be like, holy mackerel, I can hear my feet rattle. And he has a nice win at York on good ground, going 7 furlongs in 22. So it's not like he can't do it, but he was just good enough to overcome bad ground in his last couple starts.
All right.
Next one is the Breeders' Cup Turf, mile and a half. Warlike Goddess, man, she's just tough as nails. She can just stalk and stalk and stalk. She draws post two. Joelle can just wrap her up, save ground, two turns, pull her out, unleash that kick in the stretch. She looks good enough that she can do it. Rebel's Romance, I talked about him going to Germany because he's a gelding and not able to run in some of the races towards the end of the year in Europe. And Nation's Pride, another one from Charlie Appleby, a three-year-old going up against all the horses. He's been coming over and taking our big pot, second in the Belmont Derby, won the Saratoga Derby, and won the Jockey Club Derby Invitational at Aqueduct in 2:24, just an outrageous fast time that day. He's going to get similar ground to that Saturday, so I think William Buehr can just keep him rolling along and not want a slow pace. I'd like to see him in kind of a demanding 8s and 12 pace just consistently, and then just use that stamina to just grind these horses down. So he looks like the other one in race number 8. Then we got Flightline. Got some good horses. One horse I really like, Steve, and he's not a turf horse. I like Verifying for Brad Cox.
You know, it's funny. That's an interesting. That's an interesting take and inclusion, because the name. You know, we try to get every horse between now and noon Friday. We'll try to get, you know, at least one mention of virtually every horse in the weekend, and Verifying. You know, upon closer inspection. Is mighty interesting, and 10-1 might be a very good option for those that you know that consider Cave Rock potentially vulnerable. And you know, earlier, Dick, you mentioned the gate work. For those that didn't see it this morning, and I'm not sure if I retweeted it yet or not, but seek out a TVG piece with Simon Bray, and Simon discusses, it's a 3-minute piece, and Cave Rock was struggling a little bit, bouncing around in the had to be backed out and brought back in, and Baffert was watching, and you could tell they were struggling with him a little bit. So I'm sure he'll have a couple more days of gate schooling here, you know, before Friday. You know, between the short price on Cave Rock, those of us that are sheet players and, you know, specifically Thoroughgraph users, the fact that there's horses that are absolutely, you know, on a par with him, and the fact that Verifying, you know, is well within reach, and another forward move, and I, if I'm not mistaken, didn't Essential Quality win it here 2 years ago?
Yeah, I believe so.
Right?
Yeah.
So Cox, the lead up, Cox has been, you know, it's funny with all the attention in other areas, Brad Cox very quietly going about his business.
Oh yeah. Well, and the day that they ran the Champagne, every horse ran slower than they had run in the previous start. It was just a track. It wasn't the horse. So what impressed me with Verifying was just his stride. He was towards the inside, and not that he had dirt kicked in his face or anything, but he was just striding along on a track that was greasy and not easy to grab. And I just thought, boy, that's a horse that's going to get two turns with no problem. And he just visually impressed me, and kind of following him since then. I don't know if I'll bet him to win. I obviously play him underneath Exactus with Cave Rock, but then I'll have to monitor what you were just saying with Cave Rock's situation at the gate. But he's a horse that keep your eye on. And Brad, the last time the Breeders' Cup was held at Keeneland, Brad was he might as well just
huge, right?
put a chair down and just sit in the winner's circle because he was being interviewed nearly every race. So. I think he has a good one in that race and look forward to him.
Well, not only that, he's also got Chop Chop, who plenty of people are going to embrace on Friday in the Juvenile Fillies. He happens to have Coach in the Turn Back the Alarm. There is a Friday stake opening day at Aqueduct. And then on Saturday, Lady Rocket in the Filly and Mare Sprint, Caravelle in the Turf Sprint. He's done a tremendous job getting her back into good form, and she's had a very terrific campaign. Cyberknife, who there's no reason not to consider seriously in that Dirt Mile. He's got a horse in that Nightcap, Burning Ambition. So he doesn't have a phalanx like Bill Mott does necessarily, and Todd Pletcher, but he's got a solid lineup, and that includes the two juveniles on Friday. I'm glad you brought Verifying up, because I wanted to get a mention in at the very least.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, it should be good.
It should be absolutely terrific. I appreciate the write-up. People will get a look at it when we release the At the Races Breeders' Cup Betting Companion, the ATR BCBC, with everybody's contributions, and brought to you by Form to Win and Am Wager. And, Dick, best of luck. Look forward to doing some recapping next week, and I hope there'll be plenty of happy recap notes and tickets to revel in.
Yes, look forward to it, Steve. Be good.
Dick Powell, everybody, and there we go. A good, full attack on the turf races. All right. Going to have an opportunity here to be joined by Eric Hamelbeck of the National HBPA, who is wandering the grounds. Eric the Tiger, for those of you that follow him on Twitter. Sid Fernando will join us in a few minutes as well after we talk to Eric. And didn't necessarily expect that this morning we would have opportunities to talk industry topics as part of the handicapping. No, it's fine. You're on. Eric?
Well, thank you, guys. No, I appreciate it. I was just swinging by to say hi, and now I can honestly say I'm the rose between two thorns, being between Dick Powell and my buddy Sid Fernando. This is great.
I love it, I wanted to, immediately do two things. It's funny, because Mark Cassie, we discussed before the air. Well, we talked, they're off the turf today. There was one race scheduled today at Churchill
and one tomorrow.
Yeah. And they're off already for the one today.
Yeah.
And you've got next week, you've got to worry about three races for the claiming crown.
For the claiming crown, yeah. We've been in communication periodically. Obviously Ben has been very busy this week, but with Mike Ziegler, Ben Huffman, and Dan Bork constantly asking how they feel about the turf, they are continuing to be positive and optimistic. And so I get a ton of calls at the office and on my cell from folks who have to ship in, rightfully so. They want to know because they don't want to run on the dirt if it does come off. Right now we are being told that everything is still scheduled to be on the turf, and that's the best I can do and best I can say. Obviously, if it were to come a downpour of rain, have nothing to do with the condition of the course, they're going to come off as well. So right now we're optimistic, but I did hear about, I've been texting and calling a few friends that are trainers, two of which had horses in the race for today, so I knew that one was off. So we're just cautiously optimistic. Obviously, at the end of the day, we have to be safe, and with whatever Churchill decides, I am going to, I feel confident in saying they're going to do the safest thing, both for equine and human athletes, for sure. The races, I've talked to Ben and Dan, they will be the same distance if they do come off. So for that, we know for sure if they come off the turf will be the same distance. But it would be unfortunate, but obviously we have to take safety first.
Secondly, beside that, we got the crown to worry about next week. The opportunity to talk to Cassie was the first chance I had to talk to anybody on the advisory board for HISA.
Sure.
And you and I, a couple of weeks ago, got in a very thorough update. I'm sure you listened to Ed Martin's visit.
Yes.
Last week with me, and Ed at absolute wit's end, really, with the administration of HISA and its just disinterest in providing viable feedback and interaction with the state agencies, with the commissions, and I know that it's a work in progress, and at the same time it's disconcerting, let's just put it that way.
I agree. I totally agree. And, and with a racing secretary sitting with us, I go all the way back to April. I used to ask a few racing secretaries just for communication that HISA had been giving them. And there wasn't any, So fast forward to the process that we're in now, and it comes back to transparency and collaboration with the people who have boots on the ground. And at the core of what I've asked for recently, obviously, we try to just set the lawsuits aside. We understand it's a federal law in place, and we hope to have some input in trying to make things better if this is what we have to live with, and that really starts with collaboration and transparency. The Horsemen's Advisory Committee, I'm very confident that the individuals are on there. I would have liked to have seen somebody from a smaller market, you might say, because I still think they are the ones who are getting shut out of this. My friend Charlie Moore, who's the executive director for the Wyoming Racing Commission. So there are, there are entities out there that could have had some representation. Obviously, we had hoped to get Dr. Daniels, our national president, who's also a practicing veterinarian, an owner, and a breeder. But with the people that are on there, we certainly have board members, former board members of the HBPA affiliates, so we feel it's a great group. Will they have an effect? Steve, that's what it comes down to for me. And until they do, in a conversation with a few of them already, until they have an effect on change or showing a guidance to what is wrong with something that's on the books now, I'll reserve my comments until that happens.
Fair enough. Let's turn our attention to the opportunity at hand. Some thoughts about Friday and Saturday, third Keeneland Breeders' Cup, and, of course, the one 2 years ago, kind of a mulligan scenario. The races
right.
ran, and it was great, but nobody was here. Some thoughts, Eric?
Well, obviously, my biggest thought constantly these days are safety, and I do take a lot of confidence in knowing the guys at the Breeders' Cup have always put safety first, and that, on our biggest day, biggest stage of racing in the United States, is paramount now, maybe more than ever. Obviously, safety has always been a concern for those of us in the industry, and we've always put that first. But now with eyes upon us that don't want us around anymore, I really appreciate the team at the Breeders' Cup, especially Dora and her crew and how they take care of things. So, I obviously I'm not a good horse player because I my kids always laugh at me because I bet emotionally. My son even texted me, he was out here Saturday, and he was like, I'm betting the Ghost Zapper. So, you know, I tend to bet horses that I've worked with or had involvement with their families. But one person that I want to highlight, which I think the world of, is Bill Mott. Really got to know Mr. Bill, as I call him, when I was still with Mrs. Weber. And he's just he's as classy as everybody says he is, and just, you know, to me, a bit of a mentor from the way he deals with the industry and the way he deals with his clients. So to see him have so many good horses, I think that's an amazing. It's going to be an amazing couple of days for him, for sure. So it's going to be a great couple of days of racing. The way that the field stacked out, pretty impressive.
Anything that from a horse standpoint that caught your eye moving into this, and you've been sort of tracking. You say you're not much of a horse player, but I've seen you bet.
In other words, who do you like?
Right. No, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not going to give a horse. I will say that, you know, I know everybody's on Flightline. I understand that he's obviously a great horse, but I'm telling you what, I feel Steve Asmussen in this field. So I think at the end of the day, there's going to be some pretty good horses from Steve as well as Bill Mott. But I think I would be reluctant to give out a horse. but I'm going to be betting heavily on Bill Mott. I will just say that.
There you go. That's as viable an approach.
Olympiad is something spectacular, I think. Personally, I just see the progression of that horse, and he gives me goosebumps as much as people get goosebumps from Flightline.
Well, the weekend edges closer, and happy to get a chance to visit with you. And
I'm just glad you're here.
Glad
to see you and Rick. It's great.
Always. Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric the Tiger, the National HBPA, of course, and a little bit of industry coverage that we didn't expect. I just noticed you're wearing a Bears hat today.
Caught into a Green Bay family, so I saw the Bears.
So when I travel, I have a ton of hats,
gotcha.
And I grab them. I kind of put them in a suitcase, and wherever I'm going, sometimes
right.
I forget where I am. And so this morning, yesterday, I had the LA hat, kind of. You know,
sure.
That's safe. And so this morning I had the Alabama hat.
Oh, my God.
Or the Chicago hat.
You're not thinking straight.
But I go, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to put the Alabama hat over here. And
smart.
I think I'm safe with the Bears hat.
Especially since my Tigers play LSU or play
right,
Alabama.
Right, so I think here. One time I made the mistake of wearing the Georgia hat here.
Oh.
And that was bad news. I said, that G stands for Green Bay. And then I didn't buy it with the red. I come out with the Chicago hat.
Ridiculous.
Usually it's pretty tame.
Sure.
With Chicago. You know, you get a couple go Bears. Not too many screw them type of things. But you're a Packer fan, so you can do whatever you want. But so that's
right.
It's a potpourri. I did leave the Yankee hat at home though, because that usually gets a lot of comments
walking
through the airport.
You know, with the Philly guy over here, you know. Are you as much of a baseball as you are football Phillies?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
Historically, no. And although I've always, there's been countless Phillies that I always loved, including Steve Carlton and Schmidt, and Rick Wise of all crazy individual players. But this team, because I've got Real Muto and Harper on my fantasy team. I watched them a lot this year. Harper I've had for years, but Vermuto I drafted this year. And I had so much, and also the rookie pitcher, Falter, who I picked up mid-season for nothing, and he was fabulous. This team is so much fun. It is so crazy what's going on, and just what's going on in general, you know, in the 215. It is just crazy.
Yeah,
so
I got
caught up. Yeah.
It's a perfect storm.
Yeah. Last night was great. I see that Mattress Mac took last night really well. He handled things like just like a complete gentleman and pro. And for those that haven't seen it, there's about I think at least three different ones now of Mattress Mack not enjoying his visit to Citizens Bank Ballpark. It's quite entertaining, actually.
All right, guys. Well, thank y'all. Thanks for being here.
Eric Hamelbeck, everybody. Eric the Tiger. And it's been a good week for at least from visit. Here, let me get a picture, too, so I'll put that with the Cassie piss. Sit back down. Had Amos, had Famous on earlier on Monday off of his stake win, right? Let's do this. Let's take the break. It's the top of the hour. We got an hour zipped in. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. It's next. And we got a visit coming from Lenny Shulman. We had dinner with Lenny last night and proceeded to have one of the craziest post-dinner episodes, which humorously Hammer turned into an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And, of course, Lenny is a potential stand-in for Larry David. We're coming to you from Keeneland, Breeders' Cup 2022, and now just 48 hours away from the appetizer, the Future Stars Friday, as it were. Let's take a break. We'll come back hour two after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing,